Welcome back to another Markham in the Middle podcast. Another Sunderland League game, this time at home to Reading FC. A game the Sunderland picked up all 3 points with a 1-0 win, an 84th minute winner, I think it was, from Patrick Roberts, which is obviously his fourth goal of the season, third goal against Reading this season. He loves playing against them. And as always, we'll get into what happened during the game, albeit not much, for one particular reason, which again we'll get into. But first and foremost, the result, it's 3 points. It's, I think, is it the last four games we haven't won, if you include in the Fulham games? It was important to win this one, especially at home.
Definitely was. And I think when you look at Reading's away record, I think they've lost some, I think I heard a stat, they lost something like 10 of their 15 away games or whatever it is this season. So, and obviously it's a team we turned over down at their place without any forwards.
I don't know if I heard this wrong as well, but I think they're still yet to win this year.
What are we? Are this calendar year?
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, then that's even more important to have won the game. It's definitely one where, as you said yourself, we hadn't won for the last, I think it was three games in all competitions, the two Fulham games and Millwall. Although, obviously, for me, the win against Reading now makes the point that Millwall look even better. Because Millwall, for me, was a case of, with the way that they play and how aggressive they were, for me, just getting out of there with a point is a very good one, as long as you beat Reading. And obviously we did. And you look at Fulham, obviously we gave them two very, very good games. Obviously we know what happened with Ross Stewart. We've covered that before. But when you look at it, this was a game we really did need to win. And I don't know about you, but I did have slight concerns about the game, because considering you've played Millwall away last week, which will have took a lot out of the players, then you've had to play Fulham on a Wednesday, then play Reading 3 days later. I did wonder whether this was going to be one game too far for Sunderland, but thankfully wasn't the case. Wasn't the best game, yeah. as you've alluded to, it wasn't the best game, and I'm sure we'll get on to why. Time wasting. But but at the end of the day, it was a win that for me was just about deserved. And yeah, you can't really complain. We're up to, what is it, seventh in the league now? Just right outside the playoffs. Yeah. Did you see the tweet that was it the Championship Chats podcast? I've got to credit them for it, that said a year ago, when Alex Neil was first appointed, we drew away at Wimbledon, a year ago at the time recording, drew away at Wimbledon in League One, in fourth in League One, rather, and then a year later was seventh in the Championship, which I think says sums up the year in of itself.
Yeah, just 1 point outside the playoffs with a game in hand as well. And just while you were talking about that, I did have to check, Reading haven't won in the league since the 27th of December, which was a 2-1 win at home to Swansea. Granted, there hasn't actually been too many games between now and then, but they still haven't won this league. Yeah, this year. But on the game, like you said there, it wasn't the best game to watch, and I think that's probably an understatement, because the first 45 minutes, probably the hardest watch of this season. And given the context and the fact we're in the Championship, teams usually play the football that they want to play, they come out and they put a game on, probably one of the hardest watches over the last 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly wasn't pretty viewing, was it? And I think we recognise, I know this is going to sound so salty, well, it shouldn't sound so salty because we've won, but I think when you look at the amount, I'm sure in the first half, Reading, there was at least six or seven occasions where Reading were determined to try and slow the game down, take long throws, take ages with throw-ins, take about 30 seconds, goal kicks as well. And it's the type of tactic we saw in League One constantly. Almost any time a team came up here, they might play a little bit of football for 10 minutes and then spend the rest of it trying to time waste. But you're right, the first half was drab. Like, it wasn't a very good watch. Both teams couldn't get into a rhythm. But so Sunderland, I mean, Reading's efforts were pretty much long-range shots and from set pieces. And that was across the whole game. But with Sunderland, I did feel in the first half we did look quite leggy. I think the fact that we had played Millwall and Fulham in the week leading up to it, and especially playing on the Wednesday instead of a Tuesday in the replay, I actually think took probably a lot more out of the players than what we probably estimated it would.
Yeah.
Apart from the likes of Gelhardt, obviously, those who didn't feature in the replay. But I think the starting 11, apart from Gelhardt for Barr, was the exact same side that played against Fulham. I might be wrong, but I don't think I am. I think that was more or less the same team. So it might be the teams a bit, but it was. Okay, well, there you go then. So I'm not talking rubbish. But it was, for me, the first half was proof that the team was burnt out. It was very, they just couldn't get no rhythm, could they? And every time we got into the final third, either our final pass was sloppy or the positioning wasn't quite right, or there was just something about, we just couldn't get going. So yeah, that's pretty much the best thing you can say about the first half. We were leggy and Reading were taking ages on throw-ins and goal kicks.
Yeah. And the refereeing, again, wasn't
There's not
actually...
one podcast where the referee isn't mentioned, is it?
There isn't. And it wasn't, you know, there wasn't any decisions that went for us or against us that you're going to look back at and think that is a shocking decision. But there's just general management of the game was pretty terrible. And I think it was 28 minutes in, I think it was. Obviously, they'd been time-wasting the entire game. 28 minutes in, there still wasn't a card, still wasn't, you know, a warning from the referee or anything. I thought, you know what, let's time it. Let's see how often the ball's out of play when Reading get a goal kick or a throw-in. And I think from the 28th minute onwards to half-time, there was 2.5 minutes that I'd recorded of time that the ball was not in play. And like I said, that's less than half of the first half. And yet there was only 2 minutes added on. And then you look at, like I say, the fact there was, I don't think a single player for Reading got booked in that game for time wasting. Don't think the referee even had a word with any of them for time wasting. And the time didn't even get added on. So it's again just a case of referees not managing the game and teams cheating, I guess, is the best way to put it, because that's essentially what it is. And to no punishment whatsoever.
No, that's the thing that's frustrating. I mean, don't get me wrong, I understand why Reading did it. If you can get away with it, then why would you not do it? I completely get that, and I agree with that argument. The problem itself isn't so much with teams doing it. It's more, as you've said, the referees continue to not stamp it out. They continue to allow it. They continue to not go hurry up, basically. There was one game earlier in this season, and I think it might have been the 2-1 win over Wigan at home, where Wigan did that majority of the game, just came up here, time wasted. The referee doesn't give anything. And then as soon as Sunderland are ahead,
the first time.
Patterson time wastes. I think it's the first time, by the way.
It was the first time, yeah.
And he gets a yellow card, which for me is like, well, no, hang on, that's not.
I think the thing is with time wasting especially is referees seem to not think that it's time wasting when they're drawing the game. As soon as the team goes in front, you know, if you take an extra 5 seconds for a goal kick, you get carded or you get spoke to, or the referee will run 40 yards to have a word with you. And obviously we'll get on to the second half and what happened during that. And I was a little bit surprised that it didn't actually happen to us. I think I said it in the group chat at the time, and again, alluded to that actual Wigan game that you mentioned there, that the referees just seem to turn a blind eye to it when the game's level.
Yeah, that's I've noticed that quite a lot, actually. And I'd be interested to see what would happen if, say, I don't know, let's say Forest played Man City or something, and Forest did that. Would they get punished for it? Would they get time? Would they get card for time wasting because it's the Premier League and it's more noticeable and people pay more attention to it? Whereas in League One, hardly any occasion anyone got punished for it. And yesterday, prime example, no one got punished for it then either. So, you know, I mean, how the ref could not see it as time wasting though? Because I think in the first half, I counted at least 7, maybe 8 occasions where Reading took ages over goal kicks, throw-ins. Joe Lumley, about 3 or 4 times, took ages over a goal kick. I think I saw someone on Twitter put that there was about 11 minutes and 49 seconds that the ball was out of play across the whole first half.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how true that is, but it wouldn't surprise me so much if it was true, because most of the time it was just the ball was out of play. If you look at it, 11 minutes, 49 seconds, that's nearly a third of the half that the ball's out of play and the referee continues to do nothing about it. And again, I completely get why Reading did it. I don't have a problem with them particularly for doing it. I just wish referees would grow a pair of balls, basically, and actually go, no, come on, this is too many times. But because the referees don't do anything about it, players are going to keep doing it. The only way to really stamp it out more is if you start getting punishments out and start carding people for actually delaying time, you know, for delaying time with throw-ins and goal kicks. But yeah, I mean, as for the referee, like you said, I don't think there was anything. There's not really any outlandishly shocking decisions that we've seen across this season. You know, the Tyler Morton not getting sent off against Blackburn thing springs to mind as just one example. But, you know, that's a big thing that's been allowed to be accustomed with referees, allowing time wasting, especially when it's level, and it's something that really does need to change.
Yeah. And just the last thing on time wasting. Obviously, you saw it in the World Cup where there was clearly a different approach to when the ball was out of play. And I think there was some games where you'd have 12, 13, 14 minutes of added time without injuries. And, you know, again, the first half especially, minimum 7 minutes added on, I would have said, would have been appropriate. And then the other argument people sometimes make is, Because, you know, when you pay for a season ticket, at the top of my head, I don't know what a season ticket is, 500 quid maybe?
Yeah, it depends on different clubs charge different prices. But yeah, it's around that, isn't it, really? For a typical adult season ticket, it is.
If you're paying 500 quid, you're going to a game on a Saturday, you're wanting to watch 90 minutes of football. And again, going back to League One, that was never the case. Championship's not too bad for it, because I say most teams will come out and try and attack you, try and play football and try and win the game. But there was not 90 minutes of football played in yesterday's game, probably closer to 70 maybe maximum, and that's including the 6 minutes over the two halves that were added on. And the other argument that sometimes I see people make is, should the clock be stopped every time the ball goes out of play?
Well, that's the thing, because if the clock gets stopped every time the ball goes out of play, then teams are much less, that's another example where teams are less likely then to take so long, well, actually depends, they might still take so long over throw-ins, because they would argue that it stops the game, it stops momentum, doesn't it, if you're ever teams chasing the game. I mean, just for context, right, I've got the extended highlights package on YouTube of the game, and this was a moment where we were time wasting, we've just scored, and it goes to Paul Ince pointing to his wrist at his watch, implying that we're taking too long. Now, I'm sure everyone by now who's listening to this has seen the clip of him having a debate, shall we say, for want of a better word, against Jeff Brown about time wasting. He has the cheek to do that when we're 1-0 up, and he says that we're wasting time, when literally throughout most of the game, that was exactly what his team was doing.
Yeah.
Come on, mate. Like, let's be real here. Well, like, Reading
for 83 minutes, to be precise.
Well, then there you go. Exactly. I mean, so thankfully, we're not... I mean, it just shows, and I'd like to think it shows that we are... We're mentioning this when we've won a game so that it doesn't sound as bitter because we've still won. But it's something that does need to happen. So, sorry, yeah. To answer that, yeah, I mean, there wasn't as much... Again, I don't blame Reading for doing it. It's just the referees have got to get a backbone about it and do it, because more teams will keep doing it. And as for the clock stopping thing, I could see players still trying to time waste, because, again, even though the clock will stop and it continues, it stops momentum. That sort of thing can halt a team's progression if you're trying to get back into the game. So, really, for me personally, the best way to deal with it is via punishments, by yellows or red cards.
Yeah. Now, we'll assume that you meant clock stopping there, because I think what you did say had a completely different meaning at the time.
Oh, okay, well, there you go, clock stopping. Yeah, okay. Well, that's definitely what I meant.
Second half, very much the same. Again, time wasting. The Reading just having no interest in winning the game, really. They turned up to play for a point, which some teams will do that. And I suppose when you've got Andy Carroll and Shane Long up front, it's kind of all you've got to do, because I thought Andy Carroll was... I'm glad I can say this after the game and not, 10 minutes before the end and he goes and scores a overhead kick. But he was absolutely shocking during the game, and Shane Long was on the floor quite a few times. But looking at Sunderland's performance, realistically, I suppose for the first kind of, I want to say about 65 minutes, I think, was lethargic.
We weren't
probably the best
great,
way to
were
say.
We?
Yeah. Yeah.
We weren't great, were we? I would say the way I summed up, if you look at it on the performance side of things, as I said, I felt first half we were very leggy, but I didn't think Reading were much better. Reading's threat mainly came from long shots and again from corner kicks. I didn't think they did have a shot on target, Reading. Now I'm putting them on the spot. I'll keep talking, Mike, if you look at
it. I will research that.
Yeah, okay. But no, Sunderland's first half was leggy. Reading wasn't much better. I think Reading were coming out with a bit more intensity the first 5-10 minutes of the second half. But for me, as you said, for the first hour, Sunderland really just couldn't get going. There was one chance, I think, I can't remember who played him through, but someone put a very good through ball to Joe Gellhart.
It was Edouard Michu with that pass.
Right, sign him permanently, he's worth the $5 million. But he put a good through ball in for Gellhart, and obviously it might be a bit of lack of match sharpness with Gellhart, but obviously the shot goes well wide, to be fair. But, that aside, we didn't create that much. We just couldn't get going at all. But for me, if you look at performance, the last half an hour, not in terms of creating 20 chances, but I think Sunderland did start to dominate. You could tell, I mean, if you think Reading sat for a point earlier in the game, then for me, that was even more evident from about the last half an hour. You could tell literally every time Reading were definitely settling for a point, because every time they basically just put couple of flanks right in front of us, so we had to play everything in front of them and make it harder to break down. And every time Reading cleared the ball, it was the similar pattern that was emerging repeatedly, where they clear the ball, Bart Ballard wins the header, and then we get going again and get into their third within a matter of seconds again. So I would say the win, to sort of not get ahead of us here, obviously, but you know, the win I thought was very much deserved based on the last half an hour, because again, even though first hour we weren't great, I think Reading offered next to nothing. And the last half an hour, it was literally all Sunderland, I thought. Yeah. You might have a different opinion, but that's what I think.
Yeah. But it was the 84th minute, and obviously Sunderland had made a few changes at this time. I think they'd actually made all five by the time we scored the goal, I think. Obviously, Jefferson Bennett, I'm going to name them, and I'm probably going to miss one or two. Bennett came on. Abdullah Barr came on.
Luke O'Neill came on.
Lahadji came on. Luke O'Neill came on. And Alex Pritchard came on.
Yeah, so wow. I think that's the first time we've used all five subs that I've seen.
Possibly. Especially level anyway. But obviously they all came on and definitely changed the game. And I think someone posted on Twitter before that I think it's the last, might be the last four games, maybe the last three games that we've scored after Pritchard's come on the pitch. And again, that kind of old conversation about how influential Pritchard is to the team when he is on the pitch and what he offers. Obviously the goal against Fulham in the replay started with him. Obviously he plays it down line to Lisa into Clark, and it's a good finish from Clark for that one. And you know, again, that's not necessarily directly from him that we scored this goal, but he did influence it a little bit. The ball comes into Roberts beats his man. He looked to have lost it, you know, that he kind of took a touch inside and ended up about 5 yards away from the ball. Defenders tripped over it. He's picked the ball back up, and the rest is history, is probably the same that people would go for. He's finished it well. I say fourth goal of the season. It's the match-winning goal, and more than anything, a sense of relief when that went in.
Very much sense of relief, because obviously we know about the lack of a focal point that we've got. And obviously, I think when Lahaj came on, I'm pretty sure he must have gone up front, didn't he? Because you know, Gelhart was who Lahaj replaced. I know Gelhart definitely came off, but anyway, yeah, you're right. It was a big sense of relief there, because you know what? At that point, some people are starting to leave the crowd early. That's a different conversation. Everyone pays their money, but you know, it was frustrating, because you know what we were trying just wasn't working. And to be fair, it's not like Sunderland didn't have chances. I was just looking at the highlights. We had Michu had a shot that went just over the bar. Patrick Roberts, I think, smacked the bar not long before he scored with an effort out just inside the box. I remember there was the one where the ball comes over and Elise somehow finds himself in the 6 yard box, controls the ball with one touch, and then I think and obviously hits the goalkeeper. I was like, it hits the goalkeeper, goes just over. So we were having chances before then. The goal was coming. It was just obviously when you get to the 83rd minute, you're thinking, is this just going to be one of those days where nothing we do comes off? But yeah, it was deserved. I mean, from a Reading point of view, defensively, I would be annoyed if that was us who conceded a goal like that and lost the ball in the box for Roberts to then score instead of just clearing it. But that's being hypercritical on their part, I suppose. But yeah, it was a great goal, good finish, good movement. And again, like you said, it was just pure relief. And obviously, after their time wasting, scoring late on, it was a bit similar to like Crewe, Gillingham and Shrewsbury and all that. Scoring late on was quite satisfying in that regard.
Yeah, I think the most satisfying part is when Patterson then took a goal kick.
Oh, yes. And he took probably about 30 seconds.
And he picked it up, put it down, decided that wasn't where he wanted to take the goal kick from. He picked it up again. It still wasn't where he wanted. Picked it up again. I think he went for a drink, took the goal kick. And
went for a three-course meal in Bellini's in Seaburn, I think.
He could have. And to be honest, I think the referee would have still probably ignored it.
Yeah, he more than likely would have done. Probably most referees in this league would have ignored all that.
Yeah. And like I said, I said it in the group chat at the time, and, you know, it happened in the Wigan game. I was just fully expecting the referee to book him the first opportunity that we took the lead, but he didn't. So I suppose, yeah, we complained about consistency. on this occasion, it's okay, because we've won the game and, you know, we haven't been booked for time wasting. So there is that. But we did win. It is 3 points. Does take us up to seventh. Obviously, 30 games played, 45 points. Watford just above us on 46. We have a game in hand on them. Millwall above them on 46. We have a game in hand on us, and obviously two on Watford. It is, I want to say, starting to take shape, but it's just really not, because we are 5 points away from 12th. a couple of teams below us who have played an extra game. I say a couple, one in Hull. Still very much open to pretty much 12 teams for the playoffs this season. Even Middlesbrough, you know, they're currently third. They're only 7 points clear of West Brom in ninth. It is very tight. And, you know, I stupidly clicked off it because I had it open on Twitter. So I'm going to open it again because I remember where I was. and it was actually a Luton page that posted it based on tables, on max points and stuff like that. Obviously, the current table, like you say, Sunderland in seventh. If Sunderland were to miraculously pick up every single point available between now and the end of the season, they would finish sixth on 93 points, just above Blackburn, who would also be on 93 points, assuming a better goal difference on that one.
Haven't we got like a 10 goal, a better goal difference than Blackburn?
We have, I think we have one of the best goal differences
in only the top three have a better goal difference than
us. Yeah, that's true. Burnley are just stupid with 35 goal difference. Sheffield United not far behind them on 27. Borough on 14. And then us on 10, which is significantly better than quite a few teams. Blackburn are actually on -4 and are on the same points as us, which is interesting. But based on 2 points per game between now and the end of the season, Sunderland would finish sixth, again, just above Blackburn on goal difference. And based on the last six games that we've played, based on points per game, which off the top of my head, is that 3 without Ross Stewart?
Hang on. Because Ross Stewart, yeah,
in all competitions,
we've played the last 3 games without him.
So is there only one league game without him?
2. Millwall and Reading.
Yeah. So based on the last 6 points per game, last 6 games based on points per game, that is a very hard sentence to say. We would finish 7th on 74 points.
Not me.
7th on 74, just behind West Brom on 76. So quite frankly, that means nothing because it's just based on the last few games. But what it does show is that even without a striker, even without a vocal point striker, obviously Gelhardt there, and he will score some goals this season between now and the end, there's no reason that Sunderland couldn't do something.
No, there's not. Well, here's something that you'll like. I'm going to give a shout out to a Norwich fan I speak to who's on a YouTube channel called Talk Norwich City, called Chris Reeve, and then I message him back
Big
and forth,
Chris.
Right? Yeah, he's a sound lad, actually. He's a really canny lad. But we were talking about it, and obviously Norwich got beat at the weekend against Bristol City. And he was mentioning, because I said to him that, obviously, the conversation was they have a podcast out. I didn't expect, and he said, nothing Sunderland-related, unfortunately, just for a joke. And he said, I said to him, I don't expect you to mention us unless you're playing us. And he said he's not looking forward to Norwich playing Sunderland. Now, that's as of right now. There's still about a month between now and the Norwich Sunderland game, so anything could change. But he said he would still back us to go and at least challenge for the playoffs or finish in them. And it's something that I said to him for a joke, can you stop getting me hopes up, please? But the longer we're in the conversation, you can't not think about it, can you? While there's a possibility of playoffs, go for it. There is obviously the argument of whether the recruitment team or the regime wanted to go up, and that's why we didn't get another forward. I think for me, there is something in that, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing. But at the same time, you don't pick and choose when to try and go for promotion. Look, I still don't think. Do you think we're going to finish in the top 6? Because I still don't think we will. And I said this. I can be the negative one here if you want. I didn't think we would even before Ross Stewart got injured. But
it's such a weird thing to talk about, because you look at this time last year, if someone said to you, we're going to get promoted, we're going to finish 21st, you'd say yes. But where we are, teams around us, there's, you know, looking at the teams in the playoffs, and I could be completely wrong on this and just completely overlooking someone. The only team, obviously barring the top two, who have just walked away with the league pretty much all season, the only team that I think have shown any kind of consistency is Borough.
Yeah, I mean, ever since Michael Carrick, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, were we the only team that stopped in the league that stopped Borough scoring a goal?
I think that was the first time Borough had lost since November as well, I think.
Something like that. I think Carrick had lost to Preston, which I think was in October, which was his first game in charge. And then I think he lost to Burnley, which, fair enough, Burnley are the best team in the league, so there's no shame in that. But the point is, you know, Borough are the only one who's shown consistency. I would say West Brom, probably in that mix up until the other night when they lost to Birmingham. But you're right. I mean, there isn't really anyone to be scared of, is there? Certainly not. I mean, if you look at the teams around us, Luton, okay, Luton are above us, but we've got them to come at home. And another good thing of yesterday, by the way, that while I'm mentioning it, is that it's a good thing our home form's starting to get better. Because I think I looked it up. Since we came back from the break from the World Cup, we've won 4 of the last 6 at home, I think, in the league. Obviously not including Fulham. So I think we beat Millwall, lost to West Brom, beat Blackburn, lost to 12-man Swansea, basically, beat Borough and beat Reading. So we've won 4 of the last 6. Whereas you look at the first half of the season, the home form was a big concern in terms of results, not necessarily performances. But, you know, our home form is starting to get better. If we can maintain that and maintain a respectable tally away from home, then there's no one there that we can't catch. I mean, Norwich were above at the moment. I still think Norwich will finish above us, actually. But, you know, we're above Norwich at the minute. We've got them still to play. Watford have got to come up here. And I'll tell you now, Watford are very inconsistent. Yeah. Who's the other one? West Brom have still got to play. That could be tricky, but it depends. Hopefully by then the honeymoon period's worn off with Carlos Corberan in April. So there's not really anyone you can't catch. Luton have still got to come to our place. You know, Coventry will be quite tricky. I mean, I know they're a few points below us, I think. But so you're right. There is a chance we could do something. But you're right. No one would have expected this at this point a year ago. I certainly wouldn't have done. I wouldn't have expected it at the start of the season, let alone a year ago.
Yeah. And I think some of the people that are completely writing it off, and it's kind of a mistake that I've been making up until about 2 minutes ago when I've just looked at the table, is people will say there's still a long way to go, and to an extent there is, but with 30 games into the season, 16 left.
That's 48 points to play for, isn't it?
Yeah, we are 1 point outside of the playoffs with a game in hand. There's not that long left of the season, and the fact that we are still up here, you know, with all the injuries we've had, you know, Embleton out for the season, Evans out for the season, Stewart out for 3 months at the start of the season, then injured again 2 months later for the season, Ellis Sims getting injured, going back to Everton in January,
Dan we've Ballard had to deal with missing, Alex Neil leaving in that mix as well,
manager leave, and Dan Ballard missing what was probably about 3 months as well. I think you've so many injuries, so many kind of circumstances that would impact the results and points picked up, etc. But 16 games left is not that many games left. And to be 1 point outside of the playoffs, like I say, with a game in hand, with most of the teams inside the playoffs still to play, you know, you'll take each game as it comes. And, you know, the next game, obviously, QPR away, it's not going to be an easy game. They're chasing playoffs as well. If you win that, there's another game down, 15 to go. It's probably one that's going to go right down to the wire as to whether Sunderland finish top 6.
Unless we have a particularly big drop-off. But you're right. I think the thing to look at it is the next 2 weeks are pretty crucial because, and this is something else, we've just come off a week where we've played 3 games in 8 days. We've got QPR on the Tuesday, then I think it's Bristol City on the Saturday. The following Tuesday, we've got Rotherham. And then the following Saturday, we've got Coventry. So we've got 4 games in the next, you've got 4 games in about 12, 13 days. So you're going to have to manage that very, very well. I think for me, the barometer I'm going to use is I'm going to wait till see where we are by the time the international break comes around, because you've got 4 games in February and then you've got another 4 games before the international break, and then see where we are. But you're right. If by then we're still in the mix, in the playoff mix, realistically, then I might start to believe we can do it. There's no reason why we can't do it. The only reason I'm saying this is to try and keep myself from getting excited. But I think we're in the mix. We can't ignore that. We are in the mix for the playoffs. We've done really well. As you said yourself, Alex Neil leaving, Dan Ballard being injured for at least half the season by the time the season's done. We've only had Stewart for probably about a dozen games, haven't we? If you really look at it,
I think he's played about 10 to 15 games, I think. 15 being generous.
And he's still got double figures. But Stewart missing for most of the year. Danny Bard's had a spell out injured. Luke O'Neill's been suspended. Elliot Embleton's out for the season. Corey Evans is probably out for the rest of the season.
Pritchard's missed a couple of months as well.
Pritchard's missing, yeah. I've counted off probably about 8-9 things, crucial things that have gone against us. And to still be where we are, regardless of how tight the league is incredible. It really is. And it just, in many ways, it makes you think we haven't really had a fully fit squad to choose from at any point this season. And I think that just goes to show, A, how good the recruitment's been, apart from obviously up front is issues that are fair enough to point out. That's a failure not getting another forward in. We have to be nuanced. But the rest of the side, we've got quality, we've got options. And it's, I don't know, I'm kind of rambling here, so I suppose I'll shut up in a minute. But we've really done a lot better. I mean, if someone said to you, with all those things going against you at the start of the season, without knowing what the results were, I'd have said we'd be lucky to be 16th or 17th. And the fact is that we're 7th at the minute. Okay, the league's still taking shape, which is weird to say after 2/3 of the season, actually. But we're doing well. We're doing really well. And don't get me wrong, it wouldn't surprise me in some ways if we did finish in the top six as of right now. Watch us lose the next 5 games now. But it wouldn't surprise me if we did, because weirdly, League One, it was a bit different, because League One, there was pressure for, like last season, for example, there was pressure for us to finish in the playoffs because that was our only chance of getting promoted. This time, there's not as much pressure in the Championship playoff race because we're not expected to finish there. And weirdly, that could play into our hands.
I think the team that we have now as well is far more suited to the Championship than the team we had in League One was suited to League One as well.
Definitely was, because, well, again, if you want to compare us and Wigan and Rotherham, Wigan, granted, to be fair, the other day got a big win against Huddersfield, and Rotherham got a point away at Blackpool, who've just got a new manager. But if you look at how we're doing compared to those two did so well in League One last year because they've got the physical side, they've got the athleticism that is suited to League One. And when you get to the Championship, it's not quite as, well, at the minute, it's not as strong as what ours is, because A, we can attract better players than both of them with more money, and B, because the players that we do get are much more suited to this level because of technical flair. Obviously, some physicality and height in there, but it just that's a key reason. That's a reason why we're doing much better than Wigan and Rotherham, just as a case study.
Yeah, but we'll move on. I said this would be shorter, and it's already longer. So
I think from now on, if you know I'm coming on, it's not going to be short.
Three of the best players that stood out, and with as little reasoning as you can.
Right, okay then. Little reasoning. Oh, that's definitely going to be me. Right. Oh, okay. Third, I'll go Alex Pritchard from when he came on. I think he made a big difference. I think it's something as simple as getting us yards up the pitch. I mean, Luke O'Neill, I thought, made a big impact when he came on as well. But I think Alex Pritchard just connected midfield to attack a bit more fluidly. Second, I'd go with Dan Ballard. You could have picked either Bart or Ballard, but I think Ballard's just showing his class. And there's a couple of times he was determined to really connect defence to attack quite well himself. He was bringing the ball out of defence really well and put his body on the line when he had to. And you can probably have a wild guess who my number one is. Patrick Roberts, of course.
Yeah.
You know, even when things weren't going our best, I still think Patrick Roberts was a key cog in the machine to try and connect with whether it be Ahmad, whether it be Gellard, whether it be Clark on the other side. And you know, he did, even when things weren't going great, he was still the one person I could see that was thinking, right, if we're going to create something, it's most likely going to be through Roberts. And of course, you've got to give it for the goal. Even though, you know, he didn't give up a lost cause when Reading's, I can't remember who it was, Reading's defenders that miscontrolled the ball, or just lost touch of it, but didn't give up, got the ball, and just finished it off himself. So, in short, Pritchard third, Ballard second, Roberts top.
Yeah, that is fair. Next game, though, is Tuesday night, QPR away. That was the second home game of the season?
Yes, the lovely game where we had a goalkeeper equalise against us.
A score, a dive and header, nonetheless. Hopefully none of that this time.
I still can't believe that happened.
Yeah, that feels like an eternity ago, but it was just the start of this season. But like I said, it's going to be a tough game. They are, you know, a good footballing side. They've got dangerous players. They are also going to be chasing playoffs come the end of the year, or end of the season, should I say. And obviously it's another trip to London, which I'm sure will probably be another sellout crowd, and you know, a lot of travelling in the last week or so, which people, I think, overlook a little bit for footballers when you think, you know, you're travelling from London to Sunderland, from Sunderland to London, from London to Sunderland, and then from Sunderland to London, all in the space of about 2 weeks' time. But if you had to go with a prediction for the game, what would it be?
You know, for a fact, QPR are going to attack us a lot more than Reading did.
In a way, that probably suits us more as well.
Yeah, it probably does with the players we've got, because we've got the quality to hit them on the break. And QPR's, the onus is, the pressure's going to be on QPR to come at us. I'll go 2-1 Sunderland, actually. I fancy us to nick something out of this. I think it's going to be a very tough game, as you said. QPR aren't a bad side. And I think we are, but we are capable of going there and getting something at least. Even if it's not a win, if you go there and get something, it's not the end of the world. But yeah, no, I'd say 2-1 us. We're capable of going there and getting a win. But again, it's going to be a very different type of game than what it was against Reading.
Yeah, hopefully we win, but I think it's going to be 2-2. So we'll see about
that. I wouldn't complain too much with a point, to be fair.
Yeah, a point would not be a bad return. A win would be very good, and a defeat wouldn't be the end of the world. But that is Tuesday. We'll have a podcast out to talk about that on Wednesday. I know we said that we would have a podcast out to talk about the Fulham game, but Twitter decided to go down. So trying to arrange that was a nightmare. So that never happened. But we will have something out on Wednesday or Thursday, depending when we record it and obviously how the game goes as well. And providing Twitter doesn't decide to shit itself again. But we'll be back.
You've got a ready-made excuse that this is late.
We do. But we'll be back to talk about that game at some point in the near future. But until then, we will see you later. That's all, folks.